Amit Marwaha here, Director of Investor Relations and Finance. Today, we're sitting here with Meg Gentle, CEO of Telarian. Meg, thanks for taking time out. We've been doing a lot of meetings over the last several months with institutional investors. We've had a lot of interesting interactions and traction with various people. I want to take the time to, I guess, ask you a few questions. There's a lot of accounts or investors that we don't necessarily meet because they either can't, they don't get a chance to meet with us, or they're busy working on other things. So I've been getting various feedback from questions that have been coming over the last little while. And I guess there's a bit of a history in terms of how the company's evolved over the last 12 months. Can you give us a sense of how the commercial offering and the major milestones you've seen in kind of Telarian's development over the last 12 months?
Sure, Amit. Thank you for doing this today. I think it'll be great for investors to take 5 or 10 minutes to understand our story. And over the last 12 months, we have been hitting all of our milestones to develop the Driftwood LNG terminal. As you know, it is a 27.6 million ton facility in Louisiana. And the financing and the commercialization of that facility for us is going to go hand in hand. We decided that as the LNG market is becoming more and more commoditized, with greater and greater liquidity coming in part from the U.S. about to be a 20% supplier to the overall market, that we need to focus on cost as a way to win in a commoditizing business. For us, this is going to mean integrating back to production in the field, mm-hmm. where we will know the cost of production from the field all the way to the vessel. And we can produce LNG from a cost standpoint for $3 an MMBTU and deliver to customers the cheapest LNG on the water.
How has the tone of customers and off-takers changed, would you say, over the last 6 to 12 months? Are there a couple key milestones or pivot points that you've noticed where you've seen an inflection point in mindset, how they think about the integrated model versus the traditional SPA model?
Yeah, there have been some important things happening. First, customers are really managing their portfolio for the 2023 to 2025 time period. LNG has a long construction lead time, about 4 to 5 years to build new supply capacity. So for customers that are looking to either increase their purchases or even replace old suppliers for 2023 to 2025, now is the time when they're making commitments. So that's been a major change. Second, I would say that as we compared 2017 market to 2016 market, mm-hmm. 2016 was relatively oversupplied. We could see it in the prices. 2017 saw, you know, an increase in the overall market by about 11%. So 11% demand growth, which we expect to continue in 2018 and in 2019. So this is really motivating buyers to take some action to make sure that their balance sheets are going to support increased infrastructure investment.
Got it. That's really helpful. I guess another question we get is, these are long lead projects. In terms of development, the complexities of the partnership agreements, developing the contracts. Can you give us a sense for how should we think about the de-risking process of the partnership agreement over the next 6 to 12 months? How should investors think about this timeline and kind of what to expect given your experience at Cheniere and developing these similar types of commercial agreements?
We know that customers are going to take several months to work through any process. They have a very detailed due diligence process to understand all the engineering on the plant, the regulatory, where the supply is going to come from, where they are going to get their shipping capacity from, and how they're going to work through the approval process within their firm. In light of that, we left enough time for the customers to work through the Driftwood LNG terminal and also the partnership offering of the entire Driftwood Holdings entity, which will have upstream reserves and production capacity and investment on and in pipelines, and then the Driftwood facility itself. We began a detailed process in January, sent preliminary materials to about 120 LNG customers that mm-hmm. also had balance sheet strength that they could invest at least $1.5 billion in the partnership. We have about 25 of those companies that are working through our detailed data room process, and they are spending money with advisors and lawyers, sending their teams to Houston to meet our management team, receiving our management team in their home country. And out of that group, over the next month or so, we will be able to identify one or two of them that can negotiate the partnership documents together with us, so that by the third or fourth quarter of 2018, we are identifying the partnership group for at least phase one of the Driftwood facility. And then that will support construction beginning in early 2019.
Got it. That's so, just to go back, you're saying we could potentially see some initial announcements going perhaps middle of the year, but the bulk of it will probably be Q3 and into Q4, and then launching the FID process early next year. Is that the right
That's exactly right, Amit.
Excellent.
I think we will actually have signed agreements in Q3, Q4. We may be able to talk about some of the customers on an earlier basis than that.
Sure. So a lot of investors within North America, they don't either get the opportunity or chance to get a sense for how to categorize off-takers within the LNG market, specifically into Europe, into Asia. I guess they're more familiar with how the U.S. Integrated or large oil companies kind of think about investing within the space. If you were to set up a mental framework for people to think about, how would you characterize or lump the various customers that we're interacting with or are looking for offtake within LNG?
So I definitely think there is a category of the majors and even traders mm-hmm. who are oil traders and are starting to trade LNG. And they're looking for LNG to add to their portfolio either as a trading decision or because they have, you know, long-term agreements to sell LNG into their markets where they may be involved downstream. Aside from those two groups, in Europe, the Middle East, and Asia, there are both utility companies and state-owned oil and gas companies.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the state-owned oil and gas company is also the utility company,
right.
And sometimes they're separate. Those buyers are typically looking for LNG to provide natural gas to supply their customers, which are either, you know, homes and industry or major power plants.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very important trend happening, particularly in many of the very polluted Asian cities, where governments and frankly citizens are prioritizing clean air
mm-hmm.
And the need to decarbonize the economy, which basically means that coal-fired power generation and coal use in residential and industrial facilities is getting replaced with natural gas. So this is really a fundamental and structural part of the market where the customers are looking for LNG for, you know, real energy consumption needs.
Right. That's really helpful. I don't think everyone necessarily appreciates that until you go overseas and actually see how these cities are operating. You're surprised that they haven't done it sooner. Another question or a bit of confusion out there has been how Tellurian thinks about the upstream business versus weighing the security of supply versus the optionality of perhaps bringing gas on a pipeline. Can you talk a bit about that and how are we thinking about that trade-off in terms of that balance and what customers want and how that weighs into the economics of developing a project like this?
We are looking at the supply side of the equation really as a source of optionality, yes? And in the U.S., gas is produced from many basins as an engineering exercise.
Mm-hmm.
There's very little exploration needed. The gas is already discovered. And for the most part, the overall parameters of the play are very well delineated.
Right.
So it's a matter of bringing in the engineering team that can drill the wells and produce the gas, but the overall risk of the resource being there is extremely low. So as we started thinking about gas that we will need to buy for the plant, Driftwood will purchase about 4 BCF a day of gas.
Mm-hmm.
How do we make sure that we have access to liquidity points, take capacity on pipelines, and be able to buy gas in the low-cost basins? And how do we trade that off with a way of buying gas is just to buy the reserve and mm-hmm. produce it later. What we found with the reserves that we purchased, about 1.5 TCF of gas reserves in the Haynesville in North Louisiana, was that we paid essentially 6.5 cents an MCF for the reserves, the resources that were there, which really means we have a very, very low cost option.
Mm-hmm.
If gas in the US is $2.50, $3 or higher, we drill the acreage. If gas in the US for some reason is below $2, we buy gas off the market and it costs us $2.06. So it's a really low cost option, and it's actually a really low risk source of supply where we can know the cost of production coming to the plant.
That makes a lot of sense. How do are the customers indifferent about this, or how do they think about that flexibility and that real optionality?
So the customers are actually really excited about the integrated model. Many of them have been starting to integrate because mm-hmm. they have capacity in some of the plants, liquefaction plants that are under construction, and they need to buy their own gas.
Right.
And so as we brought this model to them, it was really in response to their request to be partners with us in the overall holding company
mm-hmm.
That we structured the financing that way. It allows the customers to actually see through to the resource or a portion of it for the portfolio. It allows them to book some of the reserves on their own financial statements. It allows them to be integrated, which for many of them is their overall business model and what their board is comfortable with. And it's actually quite similar to how they've developed LNG projects around the world.
Makes a lot of sense. Really appreciate time, Meg. I'm sure we'll get feedback from investors, and we'll have another session shortly.
We look forward to the next podcast.
Thank you for the time.